Blog Talk Radio.
Time now for Lydia's Literary Lowdown on Greater Good Ministries Radio. Join Lydia at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern every Saturday and get the lowdown on today's popular authors, publishers, and pundits. Lydia's Literary Lowdown, right here on GGM Radio, every Saturday, 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern.
Hi, this is Lydia Aswalt. Welcome to the show. I have to tell you, I'm stuttering all over myself. This is going to be brilliant for the author I'm featuring today because I am a geek and I absolutely was blown away by her debut novel. I have the lovely Mina Vaughn with me today. Mina, how are you?
I am so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Lydia. This is exciting.
And now we see how prepared you are for the gushage I have been assuring you on Twitter is going to come your way. Because I was telling you in the green room, I read How to Discipline Your Vampire in November of last year, and from the first page, you absolutely blew me away. And I know we talked a little bit about defying convention, because I was a little, you write about BDSM, and you write about it brilliantly, and I'm here to tell you, if you have not picked up How to Discipline Your Vampire or How to Reprimand Your Rock Star, you need to do it. Because Mina totally defies description in the best of ways. There are no perverts. You know, that's one thing we were talking about in the green room is that Cerise, the main character of How to Discipline Your Vampire, is a substitute teacher, and she's hilarious, and she's everything you would ever want in your best friend. Did you set out to create her as kind of against some of the norms or stereotypical things we almost expect from BDSM?
100%. I think the number one thing I want people to take away from any of my books is do what turns you on and don't let anybody tell you otherwise, because your kink is your kink, and even if you don't have kink, do what feels good, do what feels right. And I think that there's this whips and chains and pain, you know, preoccupation that most people have with BDSM, and that's just not the case. Some people are more heavy on the BD, like I am, in my books, rather than the S&M. And, you know, a dom does not have to be a huge witch, and, you know, she doesn't have to be scary. And I wanted Cerise to be really fun and fun-loving, but also strict in the bedroom.
You know, I have to ask, and I mean personality-wise, because I want to be really, really clear here. I don't want to inquire into your personal life, but I have to say this. I love Cerise. I love her character. She is absolutely hilarious. She's spunky. And I'll tell you, one of the things I love the best about her is that she knows exactly what she wants. She has an innate amount of confidence that I think a lot of women lack. Is she based on some aspects of your personality or someone you know? Because she is a living, breathing, three-dimensional, wonderful character.
I think I made Cerise sort of the best of all of my favorite people, I suppose. You know, I suppose there's a little bit of me in her, since I'm very, I love, you know, fantasy in all forms. So the role play thing, you know, I think that, wouldn't that be fun? Basically everything about Cerise is, wouldn't that be great, or wouldn't that be fun? You know, I want her to be unbridled in herself. And I think I want Cerise to be what women ought to be. I've seen too many wishy-washy heroines. I really just want to sort of empower. So I wouldn't say Cerise is me. I think Cerise is kind of an ideal woman. What if you're past your hang-ups, you know? You know, by
well,
the end
I would
of the
have
book.
To agree with you. I love that she wears sweats around the house. I mean, I love, there's so many things I love about her, but one of the main things I love about her, she is not afraid to be alone if it means she must settle. She's not going to settle. She wants to have exactly what she deserves, and she finds it, but it's a little weird. What I love about William is not just that he's a hot stud, but he's a thoughtful one. He's considerate.
Yeah.
But I have to say, okay, ladies, if you want some erotica, if you want, like, your best fantasy that you've had in your mind on paper, you need to meet William, because he transformed Cerise's home into all these exotic things. Again, the scenes that you wrote where William is really making an experience for Cerise, it just is not what people stereotypically think of. BDSM, SM, it's not what people think of. And you can see, again, that you're striving to make fully fleshed characters with actual lives who grocery shop, you know, who do ordinary things. The story, the actual plot, the premise, everything was very important to you because it is all so fully fleshed. When did you start How to Discipline Your Vampire?
I think like a lot of authors today, I dabbled in fan fiction. And I think that while I don't do it anymore, I think it was a really great sort of training ground. And How to Discipline Your Vampire has come a long way from its first draft. But I really started with the idea of I am sick of alpha males. I want a sweet, swoony man who will do anything for me, and not some brooding guy who's going to growl at me. I just can't. So I really started there. I started with I want a strong female who gets what she wants, and I want a sweet guy who is just going to give it to her in every way.
They do exist, though. Here's the thing that I love, too. They do exist, because here's the thing. William is not a pushover. I want to make that very clear. He's not a pushover. He can put his foot down if he needs to, but he does it he's a good man. They actually do exist.
Yes.
Well, he's not technically a man, but
well, I mean, in all the right ways he is.
in the ways that count, he is, but he is a person. He's not some object that sometimes you find in erotica, you find objects. The woman is an object. The man is an object. And somehow they get together. You really had to think about this story. It's like the best fantasy ever. How long did it take you to kind of get to that last draft in your process?
Well, I mean, there were bursts of writing and periods of lull. I actually didn't intend, I never expected this to come out. I was talking with my lovely, lovely, swoon-worthy herself, agent Jessica Sinsheimer, who you've had on the show, and we were discussing another project, and she sort of said, well, you know, do you have anything else? I'd love to read more of your work. And I had this, and I was mortified to send it. I was like, I don't know if I can actually let you read this. I think I'm going to die. And she's like, no, please send it. And then, you know, literally just less than a week later, she offered rep, and the rest is history. And then when she was really enthusiastic about putting it on submission. I'm like, really? You think that people are going to this is a pretty kooky story. I mean, it's like four genres. It's like BDSM, paranormal, comedy, like, paranormal. Really? And we sold to one of the big six or big five or whatever within a couple weeks. And, I mean, it was the biggest surprise, most wonderful surprise of my life.
How long did you walk around after the sale to one of the big six? How long did you walk around with your head in the clouds?
I'm still there. My head is still in the clouds on cloud nine. I mean, I have an editor, Mickey Newding, assignment assistant, who gets me and gets my silly, funny, but serious, and she gets it. She gets it all, and that's so nice to have an agent and an editor who understand my work and support it. And I have a wonderful team.
Yeah, well, Jessica is amazing.
She
was kind enough to understand that I fumble her last name every time. Our pal Tamara Mataya knows the same thing whenever she did it.
Yeah.
Jessica is amazing. By the way, if you don't follow Jessica on Twitter, you should, because she interacts with everyone. It's Jason Heim. Did I say it right? I never do it.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
So.
Okay. Okay, I want props for that, Jessica. If you're listening to the show, I want props. But here's the other thing, which this is impressive to me. I don't know that it's impressive to you because you just described your stories as silly. Yeah, no. Okay? But one of the things I love about
it has some slapstick that you don't expect. That's what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, you don't expect a humorous BDSM story or a humorous paranormal BDSM. And so,
yeah. It's just amazing. I mean, it really is. You've got to get it for yourself. Just Google how to discipline your vampire. Do yourself a favor and buy it. Because I was literally five pages in. And like I said, I was kind of wary about BDSM. And then like five pages in, I was roaring. Cerise had me by the figurative balls. I'm sorry, that's a little vulgar. But hey, consider the subject material. She had me, and I was along for the ride. I finished it in one reading. And then, of course, you have to follow Mina Vaughn on Twitter. It's at Mina Vaughn. Or Google her, because she interacts with you. That's why I picked up your book, because you actually spoke to me as if I was, a fellow human being. Now, I want to be clear when I say that, all right? Every author that I follow, and I follow a lot on Twitter, I have never found a more supportive environment. I've never really found anyone who is a snob at all. But after I read How to Discipline Your Vampire, I was like, I'm not going to lie, I was kind of in awe of your talent, because you do have, and everyone has heard me say this, you have a voice that will not stop. It won't stop. I mean, just when I thought you were done with How to Discipline Your Vampire, you'd find another compelling angle, and it's through your wit and amazing sense of humor that this thread runs. It's kind of like, I don't want to say making the medicine go down sweet, but you do have a very real point, not just in How to Discipline Your Vampire, but also in How to Reprimand Your Rockstar, and that is people who are into BDSM, people who are into that are regular people and should be thought of as such. That
they don't sleep in leather and chains. You know?
Not even close. I mean, I love that Cerise is a substitute teacher. I love it because it throws all your conceptions out of the window. Also, I mean, I don't know if this was a big goal of yours or not, but I love that she's so in control of her life when it comes to men. Now, she's not as in control of maybe work or taking care of her house or things like that. But the things that are important are the things that we often leave behind. Like, there are people with super clean houses who don't have a man, want a man, pick the wrong man, pick the bad boy. She's got her priorities straight. And you just get the sense reading it that that was a huge motivational factor for you in getting this story out there.
I have to say, another one of the most important things I want people to take away is to never, never settle. You have, you know, I don't want to say YOLO, but, I mean, you should feel that wonderful in love feeling, and you should continue to feel it. And if you don't, you're doing something wrong or you're with the wrong person. I want the world to have butterflies. I just, the idea of settling is just heartbreaking. And, you know, I was talking with one of my guy friends a few weeks ago. He was complaining about his girlfriend and telling me these awful things she was doing. And I was like, you're young. You're handsome. What are you doing? It's inconceivable that you could be with somebody who's making you miserable in your 20s. Like, you have time and youth, and never settle. Never, ever, ever, ever settle. So, yes, I'm adamant about that. That is something that is so important. And I try to teach that through Cerise, I think.
Oh, right. And there is no – the other thing I like – with Cerise and William is that he's not the one. At no point do you say those two words I detest so much, but I'm going to take it a little further. At no point do you turn to the crutch of there being a third person who somehow complicates things between them.
I hate love triangles. They make me rage. They make me say, well, if this person is so wonderful, why are you even thinking about somebody else? And it's hard for me. I'm not going to say I'm never going to write a love triangle, because I sort of have one in my head, but it's not going to be sort of your traditional love triangle. I don't like cheaters, and I don't like I have a hard time with love triangles because it usually makes me ragey. But I think that may be the point. I think it's supposed to make you be like, no, but she's supposed to be with so-and-so. And I think a lot of times people really stretch it. Like, a lot of times I'm like, that's not logical or that's not how people behave. So, yeah, I try to stay out of them for the most part.
And I'm glad that you do because I'm getting a little – if there's decent motivation, okay, I'll get into it. But I don't like the team this, team that. I don't like that at all. I run away from that. It depends on how it's handled, of course, but I generally run away from it. I think it's done – it's been done too often, okay?
Yeah. So,
but I can't neglect what I just read, which is How to Reprimand Your Rock Star, which was also awesome. And that was just released on the 21st of July. Now, I know the debut, your debut novel, How to Discipline Your Vampire. I mean, were you amazed by the reaction? Because I'm telling you, it rocks. That's all there is to it.
I appreciate it.
Was there a lot of...
I mean, I suppose I'm relieved that people embraced a dominant female. I think that there aren't enough. I would like to see more. But, yeah, I want my books to make people brave in the bedroom, I guess. So, and in life, I think that if we all act as if we're doms and that we have that kind of confidence, that life would be better. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're not happy in the, well, let's just put it the way it is. I mean, you don't just want happiness from a guy who brings you roses and remembers every anniversary and takes you out to dinner and never touches you or touches you, God forbid, in the wrong places. You need to have the whole package. And Cerise isn't going to settle for anything like that. But then we get How to Reprimand Your Rock Star, which is very different, and yet you bring the same theme through in a very different situation. I absolutely love the opening of How to Reprimand Your Rock Star. If you are not Googling Mina Vaughn or How to Discipline Your Vampire or How to Reprimand Your Rock Star and snatching up a copy, I may come over and personally smack you upside your head and shoulders. Okay. That said, you really should because I love how you open it, and I don't want to spoil anything. I'm not going to – I don't do spoilers. I hate spoilers. I don't do them. But I do have to say we actually meet Thea in the midst of a loss. I mean, not a grief-stricken, oh, my God, I'm never going to survive loss, but she's lost an important game. And I thought that was such a bold beginning for me to be introduced to a character at one of the not wonderful parts in her life. Was that important to you to try and fix the character of Thea in our minds?
Well, I appreciate the kind words. I thought it's important for us to see Thea as a fighter. I want another strong woman, but I want another strong woman who needs growth. And, you know, I don't want her to be... to have a man show her the way. I want it to be a self-guided journey. But I did think we have to start sort of at a little bit of a low point with Thea. And in a way, you know, I started with a low point with Cerise, the three strikes and she's out. And with Thea, you know, another sports analogy, she just suffered a little bit of a loss. So I think I want to grow, but I think I want their growth to be self-guided. And I think I did that. I hope
you did do that. You're not going to hear any objections from me. You're just going to hear more compliments. I warned you. I warned you for a couple weeks solid on Twitter. You know this. It is, though, it's important to me because all too often when you have a strong heroine, what you get is somebody who is so impossibly badass that she almost repels men rather than virtue of her confidence pulls them in. And I've always thought that's not how it works in real life.
Right.
In real life, the more confident you are, the more men are attracted to you. And I love that you chose that route with her because she's fine with herself. Thea could improve a few things here and there, but she's fine with herself overall. But it was still a brilliant choice to open up with her losing because you've got her strength. I mean, you sketched this out in, oh, my God, just a few paragraphs. You knew who Thea was, and you liked her. She was sympathetic because she may have lost, but she wasn't down. She was not down for the count. She was going to get up.
Right.
She was going to do more. She was going to do harder. And let's talk. There's definitely an age difference between Thea and Cerise.
Yes.
And I love that, yes, too.
Yeah. I wanted to sort of, with this series, the Domination series, I named it that for a reason. I think that women across the country, regardless of your age, regardless of anything, you can be dominant in life. And I don't necessarily mean that you are a sexual top. I mean that you can... that you can take control of whatever situation you're in, and you can be on top. So I wanted to show somebody young in that situation. And yeah, Thea she's in college, and you don't typically think of people dabbling in that sort of thing in college, but they do. And that's why I was really glad to have her a mentor. Scarlett, a lot of people, you know, she's a fan favorite. But yeah, she sort of mentors Thea through this. So I did have somebody experienced in the book with her. But yeah, I wanted, you know, my books are about strong women and the things that they love and getting what they want. And my third book, How to Punish Your Playboy, which I just turned into my editor, has yet another strong woman in a different situation in her life. And I try to show a spectrum of just, like I guess that's strong women.
I think a tear just slowly coursed down my cheek because I know I'm not going to get my eyes on How to Punish Your Playboy until spring of 2015, and I wants it. I wants my precious. I'm not going to try the golem voice. I don't think I can manage that. But, you know, that was another striking choice and a really good one on your part in How to Reprimand Your Rockstar. I love that Thea, because she's younger, she's realizing things about herself and her sexual preferences. And so she doesn't even know that her preference is to be a dom. She has no idea.
Right.
And it is,
right.
I love that. Was that kind of a choice on your part to almost reach out to people who don't know that they kind of have this preference?
Yes. Yes. I don't want to get too personal, but I think that there are a lot of people who don't know what to call what they do and don't have words for it or don't have a name for it and just think, well, that's just me. That's just what I am. That's just who I am. And I think that to find that there's a community or at least a word for what it is you want, you know, I think that was definitely intentional. Absolutely.
And you go one step further, and I want to applaud you for it because it's not shameful. Thea does not react to it in any way where she thinks, oh, my God, there's something wrong with me, because, quite frankly, there's nothing wrong with her. And you make that point loud and clear without having to type it out at any point. She knows it. And you admire this girl for being brave enough to take her needs in hand and make sure that what she wants is what she gets. However, the other thing that runs through both books is that Cerise and Thea both have insecurities. They just don't, they refuse to allow themselves to trip over those insecurities. They are going to forge ahead.
And they're human. It makes them it makes them more human because, you know, I've seen so many characters that are unbelievable on several levels. And I want people to be able to see themselves in Thea and in Cerise. But I'd like them to be realistic but also idealistic at the same time.
So. Well, there is one scene that I just have to reference because it struck me in that Thea confronts kind of a bully. And I'm not going to disclose everything that happens. I'm not going to go into detail. It is well worth a reading. It's in How to Reprimand Your Rockstar. She confronts a bully. However, a little down the line, she decides to support that bully. And we didn't talk about this in the green room because...
Yep.
I don't know, I wanted to geek out over on air. There you have it. But I thought that was extremely powerful because it struck me of her personal character, what she was like, and that it kind of blows away this myth that you are something other than normal if you're into BDSM, and it actually demonstrated the benefits of being a dom, which is I'll confront you, but I have enough personal maturity and personal responsibility to say, man, you had a bad day. You can do better again tomorrow. That was an outrageously good scene. All you have to do is sit there and take it like a woman. There's no question there. It was an outrageously good scene. It told me everything I wanted to know about Thea as a person, and it gave me a glimpse into her future, which brings me to a thorny question, and that is, are we going to get the opportunity in the future, this is even past How to Punish Your Playboy, are we going to get an opportunity to spend any time with these characters again, or am I going too far in the future for you?
Well, there are no plans right now for it. You know, I may write an outtake for a blog at some point. I may
Kindle.
What was that?
That's right. I just tried to subliminally say Kindle single. I would buy a Kindle single. I'm just throwing it out there. Do go on.
Well, my publisher would have to be the first to see that and take a stab at that. You know, I wouldn't be opposed to writing, you know, a novelette or, you know, a short piece, like you said, a Kindle single, but that's not in the plans right now. It's not in the works, so I'm not going to be deceptive or just, you know, whatever. You know, that's
But you know what?
Not in
that's
the works.
Okay.
It's not in the works,
that's
but
okay.
It's not in the works, yes. So I'm not against it.
There's a, yeah, but that's okay. And the reason I say it may be a funny question, it may not be something you've considered, is because you do give us a little bit of a treat. I will not disclose, but instead I'm dangling like a little tempting piece of chum in front of sharks. You do give us a little scene that you know I love that might have something to do with some characters we've seen before in How to Reprimand Your Rockstar. I am purposely being obtuse. You will have to buy How to Reprimand Your Rockstar, which you should, and How to Discipline Your Vampire, which you also should, because, Mina, you're just insanely talented. Now, we're going to go to a quick break, and then Mina's going to sit very calmly as I continue to laud her for her linguistic talent, as well as everything else she does for other aspiring authors and authors alike. So everybody join us right back here on WGGM on Lydia's Literary Lowdown.
Hello, everyone. B. Delosier here with a rundown of GGM Radio's brand new schedule. Boy, have we got some wonderful new programs with great new hosts. A little something for everyone. On Mondays at 11 a.m. Central, it's Messages of Light with Amanda Dowell for an hour of psychic chat and inspirational guests. Mondays at 7 p.m. Central, it's time for Primarily Paranormal with psychic Tina Marie. Share an hour with Tina and Bob Weber of Gulf Coast Paranormal. On the second and fourth Tuesday of every month at 8 p.m. Central, it's the Back to Brilliance Hour with Lynn Hoft and Vivian Hildebrand, an hour devoted to your spiritual growth. Wednesdays start at 11 a.m. Central with Maggie Holbeck and Crystal Clear Coaching, featuring motivational inspiration to get your life back on track. At 1 p.m. Central, join Claudia Cleary on Wednesdays with Namaste Nutrition for an hour of soothing chat all about good health, positivity, and spiritual balance. Thursdays, start your day at 9 a.m. Central with Nancy Murdoch and Mastering the Art of Joyfulness. Let Nancy and her special guests lift you out of that rut and get you back in your groove. At 8 p.m. Central, join Dr. Gregory Scott for the Light Giver Universal Healer Hour. Gregory offers spiritual education to further you along your path to enlightenment and empowerment. Fridays at 12 noon Central, it's Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Join Brenda for an hour of inspiration and motivation, featuring a lineup of today's most popular authors and guests. Friday night at 7 p.m. Central, enjoy an hour of psychic chat with spot-on reader Tasha Harris and the Angels Network. Saturdays begin at noon Central with B. Delosier, yours truly, and the Metaphysical Edge for psychic chat and interesting guests ranging from UFO research, paranormal experiencers, and all things metaphysical. At 2 p.m. Central on Saturday, it's Audrey Quinn and My Beauty Angel, an hour created just for you with tips and tricks on how to be the best you can be with what God has given you. Sunday is a day of service here on Greater Good Ministries Radio, each week featuring a different interfaith minister, bringing joy, upliftment, and unfoldment for body, mind, and spirit. The first Sunday of the month is Conversations Beyond the Edge with Dr. Gregory Scott. The second Sunday of the month is the Empowerment Hour with Reverend Barbara B. DeLosier. Third Sunday of the month is the Light Givers International Sunday Service and Worldwide Source a Nation Celebration. The fourth Sunday of the month is In His Presence with Evangelist Patricia Benneman. Hope you will join us live for all of our Greater Good Ministries radio programs, but if you can't be with us in person, you can hear any of our programs on demand in archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/ggmradio. And remember, all of our programs now stream live from our home site, www.ggmradio.com. Wishing everyone warmest blessings, always in love, light, and sound. Music provided by Orville Byrd, musician extraordinaire. Visit him at orvillebyrd.com and get a hold of all of Orville's wonderful music.
Actually going back on air. Sorry. Okay, uh-huh. Everybody, I know you're listening. And you know, I can never do anything right on this show. I'm actually at the production board, and I can't help it. I geek out over Mia Vaughn. You should, too. If you haven't picked up How to Reprimand Your Rockstar, which is stellar, I think it's a great entry. Like, How to Discipline Your Vampire is wonderful. But I really, I don't have favorites. But I think How to Reprimand Your Rockstar, it really established what it's like when you're not sure of your preferences and then you figure it out. Because she has Scarlett, the mentor, who I love too, because she has her, you really do get the feeling that, hey, I can understand this now. I know how the whole process works. I just think you did that brilliantly. So, guys, pick up your copy. I don't know what you're
waiting. Thank you.
Well, really?
I think How to Reprimand Your Rockstar is definitely more grounded in reality. It's definitely less audacious. I mean, How to Discipline Your Vampire was just over the top. But I think How to Reprimand Your Rockstar was very much more realistic. I mean, aside from the fact that most people do not have torrid affairs with super famous rock stars, it was grounded in a lot of reality. So I feel like it's more accessible. She's a beginner. She's a novice. So you're not jumping into this, whoa, what the hell is it? What are they talking about? What is going on here? I think it is very, the title really does how to. It's a how to. So.
Oh, and if you haven't seen the cover art, oh, ladies and gentlemen, certain gentlemen out there, you run. Just run. Don't walk. Because the cover art, I was like, whoa, the cover art.
When I thought of that for a cover, I screamed. I was like, I know exactly what the cover needs to be. And the fabulous people at Simon & Schuster made it happen. And when I saw it, I, like, lost my mind. I was like, that's it. That's exactly what I wanted. That's exactly what I wanted.
So, it was amazing. Yeah. I mean, it is amazing.
They nailed it.
And the funny thing is, I mean, we've been so busy talking up, chatting up, talking about how marvelous Thea is that we haven't even gotten to Keaton, who happens as well. I mean, he's a good guy, but he's got that spice that you need. Because for me, you need to have some of that spice. You need to have somebody who's willing to kind of pop off a little bit, but still is not someone who's trying to twirl you around their little finger. And he doesn't do that with Thea. He doesn't try to do, because he is actually a genuine rock star. But he's a
rock
star tired. And you know what? This is another thing I think you nailed in regards to real life in How to Reprimand Your Rockstar. And that is, he's used to kind of the sycophants rather than the people who
right.
genuinely like him for who he is. And Thea is pretty much a star in her own right. She is a
yeah.
best star. She has a scholarship. She intends to get places. She's going to better her life through education. She has solid goals, and she's not going to abandon them for Keaton, whereas Keaton's not going to abandon his career for her either. I love that.
Right.
They're both stars in their respective fields. Is that something you chose to do to make them kind of equal in a way?
Yeah, I knew that it's hard to write about rock stars without feeling like a groupie, okay? So I did not want a groupie-type character because I myself am a huge fan of several bands. I'm probably the biggest and oldest Fall Out Boy fan on earth. I love, love, love Panic at the Disco. I love Foo Fighters. I love Green Day. And I sort of had to remove myself from how I would behave in front of them. So that's why it was important for me to have Thea not even know their music, because I wanted the world to swoon over him and then her eventually to swoon over him. Do you know what I mean? So I didn't want it to be a groupie, I'm with you because of the music thing. I wanted it to be a wow, I am with you because wow. I'm still swoony over Keaton. Like, Keaton is my dream. Ugh.
Right, and I think the rock star thing was kind of a wow, what a choice. But I think about it in totally different, and I love Green Day, by the way, too. Can we talk? But I'm like, oh, my God, we can talk about this on Twitter. Like I said, follow her, at Mina Vaughn. That said, I think one of the other choices that you made that was just fantastic is making him a rock star, because I think, oh, they're strumming a guitar. They have nice, strong hands. Right? So I don't know if that was intentional. It may not have even occurred to you, but I'm putting it out there for those readers who are looking for something fantastic to read with some spice. You know, the other thing
yeah.
that really struck me, and I want to say about How to Reprimand Your Rockstar and about How to Discipline Your Vampire, is we are not talking about hardcore sex scenes that are just that my grandmother would blush to read. My grandmother, by the way, who's dead, but I'm sure wherever she is, she's already read How to Discipline Your Vampire. I'm sure she has, because if she hasn't, I'm going to have to question her taste, which she passed down to me, so I know it's pretty good taste. That said, my grandmother could read it and be like, oh, yeah, because it's not. And was that a choice of yours? Because you don't make anything over the top in any way, shape, or form in regards to graphic sex scenes. I just didn't see
right.
it.
I think I write the sex scene I want to read, and there are some words that just make me uncomfortable.
My favorite was Moist Nest. I once saw Moist Nest. I was like, what? Oh, and I shut the book and walked away and never looked back again.
Yeah. I think that would make me actually probably have nightmares. I think it's graphic enough because, hey, it's erotica, erotic romance, I should say. I think it's just sexy and steamy enough. You know, I think I push it a little bit with How to Punish Your Playboy. I go places we've never been before. And it's definitely the heat level may be turned up just a little bit in my third and final of the Domination series. Well, I shouldn't say final, but the third that we had planned. I approach those scenes as I don't want anything to – I want them to be different and exciting and erotic without putting anybody off.
Oh, yeah, and you did an amazing – I have to say, one thing that really struck me about How to Reprimand Your Rockstar is we have to wait. That's right, folks. I said it.
Yeah.
There is not some big, huge sex scene for us for some time, and I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
And yet, there's enough erotic
boy, there
scenes.
Is. Let me assure you, it is sprinkled between the pages liberally. You get just enough, but it's like eating one bite of a freaking chocolate bar. I can't do that. If you can, glory be to you, because you must be God. I can't do it. I got enough to nibble on, and then there's the payoff. And that's you know, that was, to me, a brilliant choice because we're women, okay?
Yeah.
Throwing us over the back of a sofa and having your way with us, yeah, that sounds great. You literally just snatch a woman up and throw her over the sofa. You've been married for 20 years. I guarantee she's not going to be pleased. Okay, it's going to happen. So I thought it was a really good choice on your part. And, oh, my gosh, I'm already thinking about how to punish your Playboy, and I'm already trying to think, okay, well, if the spice level is up, this is maybe a older character than Thea, a really well-learned character, somebody who is brisk and in control. See, I'm already formulating what how to tell us what you can about how to punish your Playboy. Tease us.
Okay, well, the heroine is Veronica Kane, and she is a curvilicious pinup girl with stoplight red hair, and she's a pinup queen and a vintage car mechanic. She restores vintage cars. So not only does she model on them, but she restores them. And one day at a car show, she sells her beloved, most prized car to this arrogant, handsome, drop-dead, make-you-drool playboy who she just can't stand his stink of money, but he is just irresistible. And she just thinks, well, I would love to take him down, Peg. He needs to be brought down from his ivory tower, and I want to be the one to do it. So it is steamy, sexy, fun. And Aston, who is the hero, Aston has come from a very rich family who owns half of the restaurants. He's a family of restaurateurs in Federal Hill in Providence, which is very famous for their Italian food. And he is he's an Italian prince, you know. He's rich, he's spoiled, he's gorgeous. He looks like a young Marlon Brando. And he's a talented cook. So the story is also about Aston finding his own way, branching out from what his family has provided for success, and wants to branch out on his own. And he and Veronica sort of go on a journey together. Literally, they go on a road trip. So it is fun on the road, sexy deliciousness. Is that a good tease?
Where do I even start? Is it a good tease? It's a brilliant tease because I'm already, the wheels start turning. Whenever I know she's a mechanic, I know she's really intelligent, and I know there's nothing he's going to put over on her. When you say she wants to take him down a peg, what is that? It's a sentence. She wants to take him down a peg. But what it tells me is that this is not somebody who, it's another strong character who is like, look, okay, you're sexy, and I'll ride you like a rodeo cowboy. Well, maybe the bull.
Yeah.
Probably the bull. Although some people do ride cowboys, I'm sure they do. Anyhow, instead of segueing off into a land I'll probably never return to, I know that she's like, well, you know what? It looks like he's going to get the job done. I'm going to do it, and then he's going to see what it feels like to be left. But. Then you throw even more into the tease, which kind of tells readers that, hey, you know what? There's going to be maturity here. There's going to be maturity because if these two can go on a road trip together, they obviously are going to come to some sort of common ground. And I know you because I've read your books. There's going to be some intelligent discourse there. The horn will probably honk now and again, if you know what I'm saying, but there will also be, I am nobody's fool, thank you very much. So I love it.
Yeah.
It's a great piece. It's a great piece. And spring. Spring is so far away. You do realize that.
It's almost like 7 months away, which is like, I mean, in the publishing world, 6 months isn't very long because we have to design the cover. I have to do my edits for my editor, Mickey, and then I have to do copy edits and then, you know, proof. And, you know, there's actually a lot to be done in 6 months. So it may seem like a long way, but I just turned it in on Friday. So,
yeah, well,
it's kind of at the beginning of its journey in a way.
Yeah.
What was that?
I have the patience of a gnat. I really have. At all. But you know what? I mean, one of the biggest things, because I'm really in a fortunate position thanks to the lowdown and to doing book reviews and everything, I get a lot of books in advance. If you're one of those people who kind of it blogs about books from time to time, the best thing you can do is support an author by buying their work. So when I get ARCs, I also, when that book is released, I will buy the book because I am not a believer, and I'm not asking for your opinion. I'm telling the audience that I am not a believer in free, free, free. I think you should pay for a quality product, and I like to support authors by buying their work. Everyone I interact with on Twitter feels the same, and I want to give you all a shout-out because you're absolutely awesome. Speaking of absolutely awesome, Mina, you are such an amazing mentor in a way to so many of us aspiring authors. You do
Thank
so
you.
Many things. Well, whenever you're talking about going through this whole process, you just turn in How to Punish Your Playboy, and you wrote that lightning fast. If we have time, I'm going to address that. But you are someone who exemplifies class, funniness, and not self-deprecation, but you don't seem to take yourself so seriously that you can't talk to the little people. In fact, you go out of your way to help them. So, I mean, how
nobody's little. Nobody is little. I'm little. We're all little.
But is it, well, no, you haven't seen my thighs, darling. But that said, okay, that said, was that, like, something you just always knew, hey, if I ever make it, when I make it, I'm going to help out. I know what it's like to be on that side, and I'm going to help out.
Here's where I'm coming from. I actually, and you may think I'm a sicko, and now you're going to be like, wait, Mr. Smina, to say this, I loved querying. Isn't that weird? Like, for so many people, it's such a painful process. I thought it was the most fun I've ever had, writing a query, pitching, agent hunting. I think it's so much fun, and I learned a lot. I was in the query trenches for a year and a half, and I wanted to pass on all the successful things I learned from being in the query trenches and following all of the blogs that help and the contests that help, because I was in it. I was down in it, and I wanted to pass that along, not because I'm so successful and I'm this big six author, but because a lot of people get frustrated and quit, and that's the last thing I want to see. I think that success breeds success, and why shouldn't more writers help each other out, and why shouldn't more writers help each other and get published? Because nobody reads one book and is like, well, that was great, I'm never going to do that again. No, when you're a fan, you become rabid and you love and you read more. And I just think love breeds love, and of course I want to and give them tips that have helped for me and read their work and help critique it, because I am a fan first and foremost, so why not?
Yeah, but what amazes me is that none of you, of all these wonderful authors I've had on the lowdown over the years, none of you realize how amazing it is, and I don't know that any of you are ever thanked properly or told how much it means to those of us in the trenches that sometimes just speaking to an aspiring author, like I've said it before, you spoke to me on Twitter and I was like, whoa. And I know that's stupid. It's also geeky, which you know I am, but it's like sometimes
geeky is not a bad thing.
Well, it can't be a bad thing, because even knowing that someone can speak to you on Twitter and expect a reply as long as they're not an idiot is something. I mean, you don't, you and many authors I've had on here before don't realize how much it means to us. So I think you deserve a big round of applause. I'd stand up and give you a standing ovation, but I'm just too damn lazy to do it.
Oh, you're
really,
this
though,
has
from
been
the
a
bottom of
ovation.
Our hearts, thank you, because you do so much on behalf of other authors.
Thank
that
you.
Said, okay, I cannot resist. What is beyond this trilogy? What is in your head regarding the next outing after How to Punish Your Playboy comes out?
Okay, well, I have not, you know, formally sat down with my agent to talk about more series or what we're doing specifically, but I have a few things, you know, that are sort of percolating in my mind. I found through writing Playboy how much I love to talk about food. And I mean, lady, your tweets, like, they've given me, like, extra 5 pounds of those delicious treat tweets that you do. So you tweet the sweetest on Twitter. But I love to talk about food, and I love to write about food. So I would love to write Sexy Chef. I think that's something that I would like to do at some point. Like I said, no promises. You know, this isn't something that I've formally planned. But goddamn, I love men who can cook. So there's a chance that I might be doing that. I've had a lot of requests for you know, Scarlett's story. People are dying from How to Punish Your, I mean, I'm sorry, How to Reprimand Your Rockstar. People are just dying to hear Scarlett's side of the story. I don't know if I'll write one as an outtake or something. You know, there is like another sort of William and Cerise adventure in my mind. I don't know if I could ever get it out on paper. But yeah, I don't know. I do like food, man. I do like food and men.
I don't want confidential details. I just want to know that you're writing. Because when you across the incandescent voice, and you have it, when you come across it, it's like an addiction in and of itself. When I find a good author, I stick with that good author. I will read whatever they put out. Are you the same way, by the way? Can I ask? I'm not asking for names, but if I find a great author, I've got to keep reading that author.
Well, I have to say that's definitely true. I think that once somebody has me really hooked, I stick with it. But if I have the attention span of a gnat if I'm not that interested. So there have been series that I've quit 3 books in just because I'm like, you know what, I've had it. But if I really love it, then yes, I will absolutely stick with it. But the magic still has to be there. I don't have a lot of time, and if I'm reading, I want it to be immersive and obsessive. And if I can't keep that up, I do quit. But not with my friends' books and not with books that have truly continued to impress book after book after book. Is that a good answer?
Yeah, it is. But speaking of impressive, I mean, it's obvious you don't have a lot of time, and yet you still devote time to helping out other authors. I just want to point it out. There's no question there.
Thank you.
I just want to point it out. So you
it's
have to
fun.
Face it live on air and be like, yeah, I devote my time to that. Gosh, that might even make me a good person. But talking about food, you're killing me, because that's what we talked about in the green room and why I ran over commercial and you just heard silence, because I was chastising in the best way possible. Read How to Reprimand Your Rockstar. There is Greek food to die for in there. You're reading these descriptions, and for people like me who have cut the calories and are working out and can actually see bicep definition, for people like us, it's sweet, sweet torture. Your description of food make me anticipate How to Punish Your Playboy so much, because I was drooling. I'm not going to lie. And that should impress you, because it's not like you devoted loads of time to food. There were no ice cubes thrown over bodies or anything like that. You talked about authentic, amazing Greek food. Not often, but enough that I was like, oh, she's killing me. She's freaking
killing me. Oh, then you're going to have You're going to have to keep snack bars on hand when you're reading Playboy. I'm warning you right now. There is so much food. It's like I would like have to eat it I have to write it on a full stomach, because otherwise I would be like running to the kitchen and just like snarfing Nutella and like licking it off my hands. Like it made me really hungry, and I was writing it on a full stomach. So warning.
Jessica already read the whole thing, because Jessica is an enormous foodie. If you do not follow her, like I said, it's Jason Heim, I always say it wrong,
right,
on Twitter. Or just search Jessica Stenheimer on Twitter, because, oh, that woman. The thing.
Yeah, she loves food, and she did love the food in Playboy, I can tell you. Because, like, there were actually a couple of sandwiches we talk about, like, that we're still talking about. We're like, oh, the focaccia burger.
What? You should put out a cookbook. You should. Like, I'm probably going to be all over you after How to Punish Your Playboy, just to friggin' the things that you can describe. Because the thing is, anybody can write about food. But you wrote about food, and I was, like, looking for a napkin. It really was that good. Now, let me tell you something. I'm a fan of Anthony Bourdain's. I've read his stuff. He describes food, and he's a great author. I do recommend you read him, but I have to tell you.
Oh, I've read everything he's written. I love him.
You may have a little bit of an edge over him because, I mean, you're really describing, it's the family also, because I think we all have our traditions. We all have our traditional foods, and for whatever reason, that struck me in How to Reprimand Your Rockstar, that Thea comes from this wonderful Greek family, and you just think, you know, her grandmother makes special dishes, and she talks about them, and you're like, oh, please, please, stop.
I love Greek food, so I was very excited. I wanted, I just sort of knew Thea before I wrote her. I can't explain it. I just knew that she was this tall, wild-haired Greek goddess.
Yeah, and I love...
Can I tell you a secret?
I
have a secret, and nobody knows this except for Jessica.
What?
I'm gonna share my secret. This was a paranormal first.
No.
It was. It was paranormal. We had a lot of mythology. It was mythological. And the first draft just ended up being so audacious that I was like, yeah, I just can't. Like, this is, I went too far with the mythology. So we just sort of kept, like, the mythological sort of references and tone, but we cut the actual paranormal out. Because when I say cut out, I mean entirely rewrote. This book has been rewritten entirely. But, yeah, I mean, Keaton was a Norse god.
You should see me. Like, we should have Skyped this, except I don't have makeup on and I don't want your eyes to bleed because I'm actually pouting like a child. I'm pouting like a child because Athena, naturally, I love Greek mythology. I am a Greek mythological geek. I love it.
Yeah.
I might fish up
the draft of that. I mean, but Jessica and I both agreed. We're like, this is just crazy. I mean, there was like a boat chase with Poseidon. It was ridiculous. So like, at the end, I was like, wow. That was ridiculous. I mean, Scarlet was Aphrodite, but yeah, I mean, I completely rewrote it. So,
are you trying to hurt me?
I know. You're like, you
said everything you just said. I'm like, what? I want that. Oh,
trust me, the version the world got is a million times better. Like, trust me. It should have been a contemporary. It is a contemporary. People love it as a contemporary. If you read the silly mythological draft, you would have laughed yourself sick. So,
but now you can't get away with this. You cannot dump this on my head and promise then in the next breath that you're never, ever, ever going to write anything involving Greek mythology again. Because
I definitely might. I just, it just didn't work. It didn't come together the way I wanted it to. But now, How to Reprimand Your Rockstar, the version that's out, is the way it really should have been. It's contemporary. It's new adult. It is hot, and I'm very happy with it, and I'm very proud of it.
You should be. You really should be. But, you know, now I may sob helplessly curled in a fetal position in my shower after this. Because it's like, oh, you writing paranormal, I mean, you knocked it out of the park on How to Discipline Your Vampire. Let me be very clear. I know we don't have a lot of time left, but I have to say this. Do not expect any conventional ideas or notions of vampires whatsoever. Do not expect William being a vampire to form the largest part of the story, half of the story, 25% of the story. He is Cerise's. That's what counts. So this is there. I mean, I know you could knock it out. You've just killed me with this. But that said, I'm not featuring you like I should be, okay? That said, for those people out there, because I know, you know, agents and editors and everybody are saying, oh, my God, vampire. It is not like that, because I'm always looking for things that defy convention. How to Discipline Your Vampire defies convention. It does it mind-blowingly well. You love Cerise. You love William. You root for them, and I'm not going to say if they have the ending or not because you have to buy the books. That's it.
Thank you.
So, Mina, like I said, I always run out of time too quick on the show. I could talk to you for hours, especially with this bombshell you've just dropped upon my head. Thank you so much for that. That said, thank you so much for being on the show because you're actually our season ender. I wanted to end off on the highest note possible, and here you are.
Thank you so much. This was a blast. I feel like I could talk for another hour, too. I'll see you on Twitter, friend.
Oh, that you will. And on that note, everybody, you need to check out How to Reprimand Your Rockstar. You really do. How to Discipline Your Vampire is awesome, but you don't enjoy a series as much if you don't go through that progression. And that progression is, okay, this is what she did with How to Discipline Your Vampire. This is what she did with How to Reprimand Your Rockstar. It's a trilogy, people. The second book, I don't want to say it's better than How to Discipline Your Vampire. I don't think so. But it does introduce new elements that we haven't seen before that are just absolutely outstanding. Everybody, it has been a great season here on Lydia's Literary Lowdown. I cannot thank you all for joining me, and I will see you next year. Follow Mina Vaughn, by the way. She's absolutely fabulous. Everybody, have a great remaining year, and we will join you right back here on WGGM next year with Lydia's Literary Lowdown.